Okay, reading from the Upadeshamrita by Srila Rupa Goswami, text 3. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 You can repeat after me. Utsaha Nishtaya Dharyat. Utsaha Nishtaya Dharyat. Tat Tat Karma Pavartanat.
Tat Tat Karma Pavartanat.
Tat Tat Karma Pavartanat.
Tat Tat Karma Pavartanat.
Sangatyagatsato Vrite.
Sangatyagatsato Vrite.
Sangatyagatsato Vrite. Shabdir Bhakti Prasidyati.
Shabdir Bhakti Prasidyati.
Shabdir Bhakti Prasidyati.
Shabdir Bhakti Prasidyati.
There are 6 principles favorable to the execution of devotional service: being enthusiastic, endeavoring with confidence, being patient, acting according to regular principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna, abandoning the association of non-devotees, and following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These 6 principles assure the complete success of pure devotional service. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you all for coming. This is the core group. You know, when I devised this class, that's the reason I put it on video. I thought it'd be very hard for everyone to make every class unless they were retired like Satya Hari. So we put them on video. And then when there's miserable weather, people stay inside. But everyone will get to see the class. Now, you know, the format of this class is, because it's really the first time I'm teaching it in one verse and one class. And I realize also that certain verses have 4 or 5 times as much information as other verses. There's a vary there. So the way I thought about teaching this is doing a lot of review, like a teacher, and making sure that the people that come to the class, they really, really understand these 11 core principles. And just remember also, we're going to have... Ashley couldn't come. She was a little sick. She sent me some questions, good questions to answer. I think we have to remember that This is written by Rupa Goswami in a place called Ter Kadamba. Bryn, we went there. Remember? See, he wrote that book in this place. And it was beautiful when we visited it like 4 or 5 years ago. But you can imagine what that place was like. What that place was like, you know, 500 years ago. You know, and what the culture and what the society was like, how completely supportive the society was. And in today's society, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, everything is surcharged with opposition to practice of spiritual life. We went over this, the amount of distraction. Actually, I was just upstate, and one of my disciples visited me, and they're doing a very, very interesting thing. They're taking the leap. You know what the leap is? They had a nice business as running a school, but even in running the school, they just saw so much distraction in the modern age. Right? And even when you know, a child is, you know, how do the parents deal with the child too? They give them a little video thing, right? And sit down here. And there's so much distraction. So somehow or other, they made the decision that they were going to buy some land in a cheap place near like a forest of 100 acres. And they were going to live self-sustainably. They were going to actually go on the land and build their own houses. And they were going to build these earth houses where you build a house and you cover the whole thing like earth. And you don't need, even upstate, you won't need a heater and air conditioner the whole year. The temperature, it'll take 1 year for it actually to vary, kind of. That's how insulated it is. But that kind of, you know, trying, you know, in their own way, and they have some plan too, but their own way just to somehow counteract all the influences of this age. And I was even thinking, you know, just of the physical exercise of yoga. It's almost necessary for most people to do it just to be even keel in the modes of nature, to actually go out and face the world and what's it going to do to your consciousness and all the habits that it puts into us, all the distractions it puts into us. You know, I'm so fortunate that I grew up where there were no computers. A little head start, you know, and so much distraction. So Rupa Goswami, I mean, he's writing, it's bhakti yoga. This is for the practice of bhakti yoga. This is a very serious spiritual practice. Just like when you read the Yoga Sutras, right? You kind of read it, and yeah, it's philosophical, but the Yoga Sutras was, as Professor Edwin Bryan said, it's not for ladies in the city practicing yoga. Yes. It's like, it's for the Himalayas, you know? Okay, this is bhakti. Bhakti is not denying, but using and diverting, you know, not to deny the energy of your consciousness, but to, you know, engage it in a healthy way. And even that is a tough job. So, you know, you have to remember that. And we have to do is you have to imbibe the principles that are being described here, and then with sincerity, see how they can actually be applied in your life. With sincerity. You know, and there was that principle, niyama agraha, right? There was too much affection for rules, too little affection for rules. We err on the side of too little affection for the rules. So it's a yogic process, and any practice you always have to have an ideal, and then you have to practically apply it with intelligence. Here we're going to get one of the things that's favorable is utsahan. It's what is it? you know, to, I just, it was such a nice thing. Let me see if I can just find the, endeavor executed with intelligence. It's not just wild enthusiasm. It's endeavor executed with intelligence. So we're going to have to learn the application of it. Let me, and I want to start the class. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go over the last class and go over all those particular items. So that I hope by the end of the class, you know, these 11 verses, this is my goal as a teacher, you will have imbibed them, understood them thoroughly. And I like that better than a class where you just try to remember as many analogies and verses as you can. But the core philosophical understanding. So her question was good, and I believe it was a relevant question for everyone. So, okay, remember, idle talk, right? There's that impulse to say anything and everything, whether it's beneficial, whether it's harmful, whether, you know, we gave all those type of things mentioned in Yoga Sutra, speech should be, and how harmful it is. My God, what come? I remember, what comes out of your mouth? What comes out of your mouth? And what it does to the environment. You can reflect back in your life of the things you've said. Did you ever send an email about someone to someone else and then press the wrong button and went to them? Well, man, that just happened to me about 6 months ago. Do you think this person maybe has a little Asperger's? What, you know, I was making a philosophical point about something, but it just, anyway, that was a no-no. But, you know, so much harm. And then the frivolity and the nourishment of the false ego. Because what happens is, when you have a desire and you act on the desire, it increases the desire. So when you have all these impulses from the false ego mounting in the consciousness, right? For dominance, for control, for all these things. And a lot of it in terms of talking about others or just frivolous ways in which it just keeps on fortifying and fortifying and fortifying and fortifying the false ego, which is the source of all our problems. And if you don't realize it now, you will realize it at death. I hate to do the hell, brimstone, and fire, but it's coming. You will realize it at death. And I told you, 65, I'm looking and, hey, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and I want to do some work now. I want to do some work now, even more and more serious work, so that in many ways, and in fact, a lot of these items are all connected to this one core point about the two voices, the voice of the soul and the voice of the false ego, and when you follow the voice of the soul, your love increases. When you follow the voice of the false ego, that conception increases. So they're all connected. A lot of these items are connected. They're kind of, it's like if you have a theme, then you'll have so many things, but they'll all be connected to one thing. If you give a good class, there's a theme. And you may say so many things, but it's connected to one thing. And if it's not, then nothing has any dynamicism. This is a just thing, any of you are teachers or share things, whenever you have any type of composition, I guess it's even a yoga class, if there's a theme, then everything you do becomes interesting. But if you have no theme, It's not a point that you're nailing into the people. Even every book has a theme. It's a point that's being nailed into the people. Then everything is dynamic, even simple things. But when it's all disjointed, you know, then everything it loses interest. It has no power. Points have power when they're connected to themes. When they're spoken in a disconnected way, they don't. So this book also has a theme, and it's like focusing in on that point. And it's coming from a very, very serious perspective. When you look philosophically at the world, it's quite serious. We don't take it as serious. And we're going to discuss that today. We don't take it as serious, but the world, it's very, very serious business. Very serious to realize the soul and make that your objective. And then there are practices, and there are do's, and there are don't, and there are understandings. So this is kind of, it's when I'm going through it, and here I am, Rupa Goswami, and he was writing the book, how pleased he would be that his book, I don't know if he envisioned that his book would be, the United States of America wasn't even discovered yet when he wrote the book, that this book, you know, so it's really where you should go. The question is where you're at and how to go there and your sincerity. That's where it is. So let me talk about her question and see if you have any other questions. I definitely found myself engaging in idle talk that isn't beneficial to anyone involved. However, I found myself engaging in idle talk in order to associate, relate, and connect to my loved ones with an open heart. For instance, talking with my husband about his favorite basketball team, which isn't spiritual, but I can see that engaging in the conversation makes him happy and so excited. I feel this is okay, but is it something that would be helpful to avoid? To be honest, I wouldn't even know how to avoid it without being rude. So these are practical questions, you know. And I even see, at least three people in the room that are married to people who are not, you know, committed to this particular path. But it's not like that. It's just dealing with everything in the world. So, so I think what you have to do is, we're just not in an ideal situation. And then we have to apply things in an ideal situation. And it broadens the scope of what is Dharma. You know, Dharma is the right thing to do in a particular circumstance. You know, and one man's food is another person's, one man's food is another person's poison. So we're all in different types of situations as such. She's just giving one, where she has a situation where she's protected, supported, you know, emotionally satisfied, provided for, etc., which is helpful for her. So now in that situation, how to apply these principles in a practical way. Well, I think we can go back to what we discussed with Atyahara, what is over of collecting, you know, what is excess. And the thing was, we don't live to enjoy, we enjoy to live. And so there's a certain amount of enjoyment, there's a certain amount of practicality and dealings, etc., that are practical. But the main thing is we have an objective. And we see what's best for the objective. And best for the objective, not only for her husband, but probably for herself. You know, she needs some type of... the same question she came, the second one is about television. half a sitcom, 4 rounds. So it's the same thing with that. It's a question of the ideal, where you're at, and not only where you're at, but what you can do. But the most important thing is you have the honest and sincere objective. And if you have the honest and sincere objective, then you can move forward in any situation and make the right choice, even if it seems like not Dharma. In one sense, it may be your duty. My mother's 95 years old. You know, so when I visit her, anyway, twice during the day, I go and sit in her room. What am I going to talk about? You know, honestly, am I, you know, I'm a sannyasi too. You know, what am I going to talk about, right? So there's certain things that are practical in the world. In terms also of being very, very careful in the name of Krishna consciousness, in the name of bhakti, not turning people off to it. That's also important. But at the same thing, you know, the principle is as we mature and our tastes deepen and our attraction for these things ourselves become reduced, then we'll figure out to do it how much we need. how much we need. There are things like that in so many things. You know, I'm a sannyas, I'm out in the world, I'm meeting with so many people, right? It's like can't be the traditional, but, you know, there's a limit. What you need to function in the world, to relate with people, etc., but no more. And different people have different amounts. And it's interesting too. Then she wrote about, I'm still interested. Thanks, Ashley, for the nice question. Okay. I'm still interested to know why television are so entertaining. As you brought up in class, what we allow through the senses can degrade the mind. Can easily see how TV shows and movies do this. But I'd still like to know why they're so enjoyable. Maybe debunking the enjoyment will encourage me to avoid the few that I watch or something like that. You know, again, with Krishna consciousness, there are needs. And as much as possible, we have to channel them in connection with the higher plane, you know, to a certain extent. But the same sense, we're in the world, and there are so many distractions, except this one I would just say throughout the TV, but what can I say? why they're so interesting is, well, we have a Klishta Vritti and Klishta Vritti. We have good thoughts, a Klishta Vritti, and bad thoughts, or good samskaras. We're attracted to many things that are not healthy. But what happens with something like television, they intercede into core needs. They intercede into core needs that people have in the world for entertainment and emotional fulfillment through arts and things like that. You know, so there's actually a need. Best thing is, you know, to spiritualize our needs as much as possible. But at the same thing, we always have to be careful not to become frustrated people either. And I just had an example. Oh, yeah, I'll give you an example of that. I'll just say, you know, I was preaching in New York, and I hated tattoos. I didn't get to New Jersey yet. This is before I got to New Jersey. When I got to New Jersey, then, you know, I just gave up. But I really, really I really, really hated tattoos. You know? So this one person, he came at me and I just said, no more tattoos. You know? This is a true story. You know, in the next month or two, he was suicidal. You know? And it was just that was an outlet that someone had for some kind of pain that they had. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying it's a very fine line of what people need, even if it's almost beyond the boundaries of what technically is there. So I'm just saying it's got to be a balance, and it's all going to come down to sincerity. When it comes down to sincerity, it won't be much. But you can joke with your friends and, you know, and things like that. So, yeah.
It won't be much.
What?
When it comes to sincerity, it won't be much.
It's just like a watch, 100 rupees. Got it? Remember that story?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, any questions about this? Because this seemed to be a point that many people... Mangal Artik. Well, I quoted the verse. The objective is, in other words, from any spiritual path, there's an objective of realizing the soul, right? In our path, it's prema. So I would say everything is secondary to prema. But when you say everything is secondary to prema, it doesn't mean that something is not even important. And gave that verse where it says you don't live to enjoy, you enjoy to live. But the enjoyment is not the purpose. The purpose is it makes you peaceful for realizing the absolute truth. It's like eating. We don't live to eat. Our goal is not food. But even in eating, there are nice tastes. We have proclivities. You know, the prasad should be nice, right? But the goal is not eating. The goal is to keep the body and soul together for the higher endeavor of Krishna consciousness. So then what I said to Gail, when you do that and you have that objective, it's probably not that much. But at the same sense, people have different needs and are in different situations. And that's what we were talking about with Ashley's question, which is not unusual. Everyone has their different situations with families and but you know, it's going to talk about this point, you know, about Sangha, you know, because it's very, very heavy. We're going to go, one of the favorable things of devotional service that's going to be mentioned today is a sat sangha tyag, a Vaishnava achar, that the main behavior of Vaishnava, he gives up the association of a satsang. And what's a satsang? It means a Krishna bhakti. What is that? You know, people who are against God and people who are attached to sensual things. You know, and then it's going to be a practical discussion what that means. You know, does it mean we stay aloof from people completely? You know, does it mean, or how do we act that makes it Sangha, which makes it a connection from heart to heart where things are transferred. I was going to just quote one thing that was kind of interesting here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, intelligence becomes polluted and one's heart becomes overwhelmed with their propensities. with these propensities. In other words, when you join with people intimately, then their propensities come to your heart. Their nature comes to your heart. One young lady told me this story where, you know, she just came to New York, so she had to live with her family, right? And good or bad, their family was so focused on, like, education, that soon she found herself in a master's program without even really knowing why. What happens also is when you're with people, whose world is it? So a lot of times we have to enter with people in their world. In other words, we enter in their world, how they see things. Because I can't impose, you know, if I walk into some place and Hare Krishna, move there, you know, you're all my disciples, you know. You come into another person's world, and sometimes we do that and we have to live in it. And that's when it affects you, if you're not conscious. You know, when my parents accept who I am and what I do. You understand? So I don't have the same level of obligation and expectation when I enter into their world. But obviously there's a certain extent. Everywhere, you know, in my house, family is supreme, family is supreme, family is God. And on a certain level, it's a healthy thing. It's actually Dharma on a certain thing. You know, there's something beyond you, the family. But it's not the highest principle. And it's not the principle that I want to be inculcated in, where I'm at in my spiritual life. But when I'm with them, that is their worldview. And I don't fight that worldview, and I live in that worldview, as you know, whatever it is. And I may even talk a little bit in that worldview. But I'm cognizant of how the world works. So I think what these verses do, they make you cognizant how the world works. And how the world works in relationship to your soul and the love in your heart. And how to bring it out in the best way. You know, and then we're there. And even 500 years ago when these things were written, it was known that people were in various situations where they had to deal with all sorts of people and family members, etc., and people that don't exactly share their views. Of course, it gets really difficult when they're antithetical to it. And that becomes really difficult. But generally, we see situations people are supportive. Okay, so okay, any questions? Lizzie.
Can you talk a little bit about where this process feels like a struggle? We know the right thing to do what to not do. But it's, and then when you endeavor to do something, then it gets harder. And it's as if the desires and the impulses were stronger than our love of God, because, you know, choosing the wrong thing. And it seems like a little thing. Well, it's just a donut, you know. But it's really not. It's not just a donut. It's a wrong choice in that
right
moment. And so that lack of willpower, choosing.
Well, that goes beyond even a spiritual path. That goes on even a diet, health, you know, so many things, the impulses. And the first verses were written specifically because of that. That's where we start with this struggle. So when you start with a struggle, you don't start with perfection. And the other thing is as you advance in Krishna consciousness, the conceptions that you hold and the objectives that you have start to become in tension with your life and the environment, right? So that's actually a good thing. Because, you know, many people, they just come and, you know, they don't advance to that level where actually I see that there's a goal, there's an objective, there's a means to get there, there's knowledge. That's why it's so heavy, really, to have, in one sense, it's really, that's why it says that guru is heavy. It's not just the person that's heavy, but knowledge is heavy. Because if once you agree, I want to be ruled by the truth, it doesn't conform, you know, whatever it is. Even if it's like you're on a diet, I want to conform to the truth. You know, you're taking up some exercise program. I want to conform to the truth. What to speak of a spiritual process. It, by nature, passes judgment. You know, I say, you know, that's why the first thing, and I'm going to go back to this, the basis, the theme of this class, and how I was discussing the theme of this class is, and I'll get back to this point, is that there's a bhava. There's something that's non-existent forever, and that's our lack of knowledge. And due to that, we suffer. This is just any spiritual path. You understand that it's ignorance or the lack of knowledge is the cause of suffering, right? So what happens is at a particular time, our experiences in the world open up something in our heart that we make a decision that we want our life to be ruled by truth, not just our desires. It's a big shift. We want our life to be ruled by truth. And when we do that in the heart, then God sends teacher. So truth doesn't conform to our desires. And I always make the point, our desires can be truth, but not because we desire them, but because they conform to truth. So there will be a struggle, and that's called Madhyam Adhikari, when you come to the middling platform of devotion. But whether it's bhakti or anything, an evolved person will come to the point, I want to live by truth. And I'm just seeing, even in my own development, 45 years, 46 years, I've been in Krishna consciousness, and 41 years, 42 years, like, you know, fully committed, initiated 42 years ago. It's an evolving process. And I said before, you know, 65 is the new 50. Because 50 is in a proper culture, which is age appropriate. You know, where, you know, the people get married, you know, in their early 20s. You know, how the whole age of, you know, and then by the time 50, you're sick of it. Then and you know, you've gone through it, you've worked through it, and you know, but I'm saying, even a sannyasi, it goes. So 60, and I'm ready. I'm just thinking too, and more is really the intense desire in my heart that I want to be ruled by truth. And once you do that, it reveals all the desires you have. Like the time where I first did this, I told you I was going to make the vow. Oh, yeah, I won't criticize. Once I tried to stop, I saw how much I do. So the struggle is healthy. And therefore, one of the favorable things for devotion, which is going to be mentioned, the sixth item today, we still haven't gone, is what is sito vritte, following the footsteps of the sadhus. And it doesn't just mean the sannyasis, it means so many people that set the ideals. Maybe for a lady, you know, maybe you have to have association with someone like Rukmini, or some lady who was in that body and went through those experiences, or maybe someone who, you know, maybe more your age, but in the process a little bit further or something like that. And, you know, on that path, I'm seeing how everything is connected. On the spiritual path, you know, we're qualifying ourselves. We may not get the fruit of it immediately. We may become discouraged. We may become restless. So we have to have people along the way to encourage us, especially people who've gone through it and have faith. I always tell, it's going the way it's going. I'll go this way. We haven't moved one yet, but... And I always tell the story, you know, everyone has to go through their dark night of the soul. Everyone has to go through their struggles, And I see how, you know, how God, he gears things for each individual. So I'm a real hard person to break. I have stamina. Stamina means prolonged ability to undergo mental and physical duress. I'm very strong, you know, in many, many ways. And even one friend joked about me, about my personality, because I'm so optimistic. And, the person said, Maharaj, he said, you're so optimistic that you could be falling out of the Empire State Building and on the 50th floor say, so far, so good. So, Krishna. So Krishna, you know, he just went for it. And he just started putting so much pressure on me. So much pressure on me. If I wanted my world to go this way, my world was going this way. And then at particular times, he intensifies it. So it was so intense at a particular time that one of my friends, because it was a particular circumstance, incident, one of my friends, he thought, oh my God, you know, I better go visit him, right? Who knows what someone can do under so much pressure. Yeah. You know, it's just, everything is to make us surrender, I'm going to tell you, because we don't control the world. And when it doesn't go according to our ways, we suffer. So, you know, if you're in that world, if you're in that view of, you know, happiness is, you know, in the future, you know, when I will be happy in the future, when the world moves my way, and you know, when you're in that kind of mode, it sometimes it moves slow, sometimes it moves a little bit tantalizingly towards you. You know, you're in a little town in New Jersey with six coworkers, and you win the lottery, and you hold this big checkout, and you're smiling like you conquered the world. You know, so sometimes it moves a little bit towards you, but mostly it moves. What is that famous philosopher said? You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just may get what you need. The world is moving for us, but that doesn't mean that God will spoil us like a child, that give us everything we want as we cry. And it's tough. It's tough. And I'm looking at it. I'm just looking at it. I hope I don't scare you away with my sannyas philosophical views, but I'm just sharing the way I'm looking at the world now. It's just so heavy. And we got it the best of practically everybody in the world. like a free country to whatever extent we don't like the political system, but we can still complain about it, you know, and so I was there and a friend came to me who was very deep and very realized, and he saw my situation. He said something with such confidence. He said, if you tolerate, there will be a fruit at the end. And I understood that he had tolerated and experienced that, that he was ahead of me on that. So he saw where it was going. He said it with confidence. So sito vritte, we have to follow the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And it means, I don't know if we're going to actually cover that one in depth. I don't know if we'll finish all these this week, because next week, I believe the items that we're covering, I went over them already, don't have that much of, you know, philosophical depth as today's class. But on that one, there's a lot of all the things that we do and follow. So yes, there will be struggle, but there should be people there to kind of encourage you. And that's why we need the Association of Devotees. Okay, any other questions? Mangal Arati, is this good? That question is kind of, and then I can cover the subject matter. Yeah, Mangal Arati.
Just a quick question, Marja, when asking questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then now exploring it as coming under Krishna's control, yeah. Surrender. But sangha, how is that? Is it defined as the loving exchanges, as association with love and intimacy?
Well, actually, when it describes sangha, that's the next verse.
Oh, sorry. No.
I'm not jumping ahead. No, you're not jumping. I'm not saying we go to the first verse. It's just coincidence. There's loving exchanges. Sangha means opening your heart and exchanging with someone. And there's ways in which you open your heart. And when you open your heart, the heart becomes shared, whatever it is. And therefore, real sadhu sangha is with those that are more advanced. That's the best. Because when, more advanced, because then we get their hearts. We get their hearts. And in bhakti, everything is this sadhu sangha. You know, sometimes when I see people, Krishna consciousness, you know, drive through the Holland Tunnel, find a parking spot, and nothing's easy, just to hear a little bit something. You know, then family, take the kids on the soccer thing, go up, you know, working. You know, the thing has becomes very, very complex. And sometimes people say, I don't have time. I don't have time for spiritual life. And then I just tell them that, but if there's just two things, seek out kirtan and sadhu sangha.
Sorry?
What? Kirtan and sadhu sangha. You know what sadhu sangha means? To associate with advanced devotees. Mm-hmm. Is that clear? Those more advanced especially. We get so much from them, and we know it. And we're not just talking of the guy on the seat. There's so many people. And there's a transference of heart. I just, you know, there's two of the... I'm trying to make a strategy here today. Well, you know what I'm going to do? Maybe next week more... I really want to review deeply some of the items, and we'll add them to that. But we, okay, here it is. Because the last two, last week was Atyahara, that was over-endeavoring for mundane things, prayas, useless endeavor, Atyaharas, prayasasya, prajalpo, idle talk, niyamagraha, Niyamagraha means too much affection or too little affection for the rules. I just want to give you a good example of that. That was given to me by Gail's Siksha Guru. Gail has a Siksha Guru. Her name is Savita Bhattacharya. One of the most really amazing, amazing lady. Whenever I go to her house, what to speak of how she can cook. But what she can say. So she gave me an example that really helped me understand Niyamagraha. Too much affection for the rules. In other words, and there's two ways that there's too much affection for the rules, just that you hold on to something. You follow something because if it's a rule without understanding its purpose, when the rule no longer serves its purpose. And I gave the example of a codicil. And it's going to mention, this is one of the most powerful ways to develop your devotion, to actually take vows on a codicil. It's very, very powerful. I try to do it. And, you know, first class codicil is you do it for 3 days. You eat one meal the day before. You completely fast on a codicil, completely. You stay up all night without sleeping. And then the next day you also eat one meal and don't go to sleep. And there are sadhus that do this every month. And I asked my friend Pradyumna, who's, you know, lived all, how do they do it? How do they do it? He said, well, it's like a muscle. You exercise it, you know. So they exercise and they do these things. And a codicil, then, you can just fast for a day, or you can nirjal without water. So on a codicil, generally I like to fast. But the purpose is to reduce the bodily needs to have more time for the focus. Like on the roots of kirtan, that day, it was a codicil. I fasted. When I sat up there to speak, I hadn't eaten yet. And it really, can, you know, the senses, when the senses are controlled, the super soul is at reach. That's a fact. When you control your senses, you can start to hear intuitively God in your heart. So it's very, very powerful. But if your constitution is that it just makes you sick and distracted and woozy, but you're following the rule, then it's too much affection for the rule. The rule has a purpose. And there are different levels of advancement. And at one level of advancement, another rule may not be proper. And someone just called me up who was practicing Krishna for many, many years and was very advanced. And he does a lot of ritualistic puja. Right? But the ritualistic puja at a particular level of Krishna consciousness may not nourish a spontaneous affection for God in your heart. God is my child, God is my lover, God is my friend. You know, it interferes with that. And at that particular level, then those things that, you know, were keeping you orderly and clean are no longer suited for developing that heart. So the example she gave me was just so good. She said, it's like the rules of an airplane and the rules of a car. When you're flying in an airplane, you don't stop at the stoplights. Right? You don't stop at the stoplights. The stoplights had a purpose when you're on the ground. They don't have a purpose when you're in the air. You know, and if you're stuck, you'll be in the airplane and, oh, it's, you know. Or, you know, but at the same time is when you're on the ground, you don't drive like you're in an airplane. So when you're on the ground, you got to follow the rules. So certain rules apply in certain circumstances. But this is about sadhu sangha. Mangalartik, I'll give something. It said sadhu sangha means that association which promotes us to a higher cause. And that which takes us from that cause is jana sangha or satsangha, just the opposite. So sadhu sangha is opening the heart to those things that bring us high. And we all know it. We all know the effect of various people on us, right? That certain people are, if we open our hearts to them and we live in their world, they're going to bring us down to what their consciousness is. And we know other people that are going to force us to come up to theirs. So one of the things that was against devotion from last week was jana sangha. To open your heart, and we know what it is. I don't think I have to explain it like philosophically or actually outline it. We know what it is. We know that person who we have risen above now in terms of our own spiritual evolution, and if we associate with them openly, whatever you're on, whatever path you're on, we're all here on some level of progressing to the next level. Even if it's just our moral qualities or our yogic qualities or our devotional qualities, we all know those people. You know, and they're people, okay, they're relatives, friends, etc. Friends, what'll happen is you'll just get new friends. That's just your friends will just shift gradually because it'll just become a natural thing. Relatives, they're part, they, you know, I understand, even psychologically, you know, our heart and our emotions are very connected to our mother and our father in this way. And, you know, so even at my age, it's, you know, just a connection in the right way is kind of healthy in another way for Krishna consciousness, that those things are proper, et cetera. You can feel that. We are infinite beings that are lost here. This is from Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar's book. He said, we have a long journey ahead with much trouble, but the disappointment and dejection is minimized if we have good association. On that long journey, by talking with them about the Lord, we can go. We can forget the weariness of the journey. So Lucy, the weariness of the journey. Sometimes the fruit is not given to us, and sometimes the fruit is held back from us. Because we will enjoy it rather than serve it. Or we won't, if we get the fruit, we won't have the requisite determination, you know, that will actually allow us to sustain it. So God is kind of playing with us like a cat in the mouse. But that said, only with the interchange of our thought, our good hope, our good, our bad, our hope, our despair, everything they can appreciate. In a group, we can go on. Otherwise, if we are alone, we will think, well, what am I doing? I'm on a wild goose chase. A reaction may come, and we may leave our bhajan and go away. And then Prabhupada said, the root cause of devotion is to Krishna is association with advanced devotees. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna is awakened, the association with devotees is still essential. And I'll read, you know, that Prabhupada said, that's why he made ISKCON. And that's what we're trying to do here in the Bhakti Center. Make a place where people can come and make friendship which promote them to a higher cause, right? Isn't it nice to know Bud and Jana? They're cool, right? But the association with them elevates you. And there's other cool people that'll go down. So it's nice, and it's nice when people show how Krishna consciousness is a very natural thing. It's the same thing as going on every place else, but with higher... With higher ideals and higher perspectives and higher objectives. It's the same thing. It's just a more... It's like my father said to me. I always tell this story that, you know, after a while, he kind of picked up that I had something. Initially, he couldn't tell, and I wasn't behaving in a way to convince him. I can say that. Because it's a different... You know, when you get a spiritual realization, when you get any truth, it tends to become a passion. And a passion means the truth is overextended. Like, you know, detachment can be a truth. I'm in the world, you know, people are hippie about it. Now I'm away from these things. Then you're away from the world, and then, you know, you don't visit your parents, you don't say hello, you don't talk to your friends, you turn everyone off to Krishna consciousness. They won't, you know, you can overextend things. So it's kind of like a passion. Anyway, I forgot that point, but so anyway, Jana Sangha. I was mentioning that. Yeah, so my father, that's right. So at a particular time, my father's from Brooklyn, so he has that kind of culture. Or culture. And, you know, what he said to me, you know, it was kind of like, you know, kind of like a Brooklyn father knows best. You ever watch those shows? They used to have these shows of the ideal families, you know, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, boring. Those guys, you know, father knows best, leave it to Beaver, all these things.
Donna Richa.
What?
Donna
Richa. Now we're going to open our hearts and go down together. Yeah, all those. So what happened is he said, son, because I have an older brother and I have a younger brother, right? He said, son, I have three kids. And you're the only one with his head screwed on right. But what does it mean? It's just the ideals that you get. Okay, now we didn't do that. Wow. We're going. We're just finishing up last week's. But I just think it's just interesting to go over these and then just have them. You understand, I'm focused on the theme. And this is why it becomes interesting sometimes. Because I have a theme. But there'll be different things that are said, but it's one point, it's one point, it's one point. So now this is lolyam, which means mental restlessness. Prayas means unnecessary endeavor. So they're all connected. You asked a question last time. Prayas, unnecessary endeavor. There were six things, right? Overcollecting, unnecessary endeavor, idle talk, too much or too little affection for the rules, associating with mundane people, and now lolyam. And lolyam means mental restlessness. Lolyam also means greed. It's you know, it's where that those strong desires are resting. So here it says, lolyam means weakness of heart or weakness of promise towards the object of our life. Whatever I find, I engage myself in that. Everything is attracting my attention. We are busy with small, petty things that are drawing our attention, and we avoid the real problems of life. We are busy with irrelevant things. Right? And there's verses that were quoted. You know, people, they do two things. They just work. And sex life. It just becomes consumed. And things are not balanced. And there's no real objective in life. It must come from the perfect realm, from Sarup, the quarter of omniscience. In those that are unconscious of their real interests, we find thousands of engagements. They are very busy, but busy for nothing. So it must come. Our objective must come from the higher... Our objective must come from the higher realm. And if it's not coming from Swarup, Swarup means who we really are, a soul, consciousness, meant for love, meant for devotion. If it's not coming from that, and if we don't know that, then we have thousands of engagements. That's why I like when my disciple, she said, you know, her and her husband, they're together on this. They're going to go to the land and they have to build it by the winter. And they're going to build it themselves. It costs $50 because you collect old billboards. It's all dirt. They make it from, you fill up, these sacks, these burlap bags, and you fill them with dirt. And that, and then you get wood from the land and you actually make beautiful houses. And I talked to him, I said, that'd be a great idea, because once you do that, this is what my idea was, I said to them, because it's so, their 12-year-old daughter is going to build her own house. She's designing it. She's so excited. But they have a certain way of looking at the world. And, you know, and there's many things that, you know, are nourishing, not just simple living. There's kirtan and programs and the temples. And, you know, everybody has to make their own choice. But on this particular thing of self, simple limits, I was thinking, yeah, if you do that, because they don't cost anything, you make a few of these places, you know, and they have, you know, running hot water, all these things are done naturally. And you have something like that, I thought, wow. So what I'll do is I'll go out there and then I'll make weekend retreats where you don't have to charge anything. Because my dream is always that we need a situation where people can come, that they can just come. And then people just give donations and things. So it's just, the overhead is so low. And come, I thought I'd give morning and evening class and people can bring a book and, you know, swing on the hammock. You know, come up for a weekend, right? But live in an atmosphere that's pure and devotional. It's nice. This is the peculiar position we hold now. The final danger is approaching, and I am sleeping through that. I don't care to take notice. What can be stranger than that? Only our particular attention is necessary for the solution. Only a moment is enough. It is not a question of longevity or a question of time. What is necessary is I turn my attention towards my own self-interest, what I am. Our attention should be drawn to our real self-interest. So interesting, isn't it? And Lucy keeps on pounding the truth, challenging. It's interesting. But if they ever did something like, would that be interesting? Come, you know, weekend, nice simple house. I felt too, make it simple, that the people who come, then between us will cook, you know? You don't make it complicated, just people can get out and live and become absorbed. Even this is great. You come for 2.5 hours and how nice it is, and then go downstairs. So that's why also the thing in Colombia, my idea is too, because I don't know. I mean, I want bhakti to be cost affordable. I also appreciate we should help people that are out there to maintain their families too, but I want bhakti to be cost affordable. And people, if they want it, they can have it. I like that system. We did that we had a retreat in my center. I organized for Kastuba to come down. And we had a system of not charging. They pay the ashram for the rooms, but not charging for the teachings. And I wrote a little something about Guru Dakshin, that the traditional system is the teacher teaches for free, out of love. Out of love. And then I said, well, how does he maintain? Well, the students, out of the students feeling what they got, then they reciprocate from their heart. And that way, you make a sliding scale that's cost affordable. So when they had the retreat there, the first one, there was 6 people. It was nice. But they gave, almost $1,600, $1,700, because Some people gave $500 and some person gave $100. But everyone gave from their heart. But anyway, that's another thing. I'm going to take some water so I calm myself down and I stay focused. Because I could tell stories. We have an hour left. Okay. Now, this is going to work out nice because we're going to now discuss the today's verse, and we're going to cover it again tomorrow. I can see that on next Saturday, and it'll work out nice that way. But I think it was good going over these things. It's okay. Levin Corp. Next one. Okay. Tut tut karma pravartanat. Let's see how Prabhupada translates this. Acting according to the regulative principles such as Shravanam, Kirtan, and Vishnu Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. I'm not discussing them in the order of the verse. I'm discussing them which Prabhupada emphasized first. So these are favorable. This is what Prabhupada emphasized. And this is discipline in your practice. Adopting some practice. This is obviously what's favorable for Krishna consciousness. And a devotee must be very enthusiastic about following these principles. If he becomes slack in following any of them, his progress will certainly be checked. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends tat tat karma pavartanat. One must strictly follow the regulative principles of Vaidhi Bhakti. Okay. Now, I'm just seeing, somehow, it's a lot going for like 2.5 hours, but it's if I fail, then everyone fails, so I got to keep going here. No, I just don't like it because I missed a point that I wanted to speak about. A devotee must be very enthusiastic about following. Yeah, no, I had my own kind of realization that when I chant in the morning, that if I can chant without offenses. We'll discuss this, the fifth verse or the sixth verse is about the holy name. If you chant without offenses, then your anarthas go away. And what are anarthas? Anarthas are that which is of no value to your spiritual path. And this, I don't know, this is something else. I'll just tell you there are four basic anarthas, but this is not in the verse. One is sarup. Brahma, Srup Brahma. Srup Brahma means illusion about your identity. When you don't understand your identity, that's such an anartha. When you don't understand, I am a servant of Krishna, and you don't have that identity. And from that leads Asat Trishna. Trishna means thirst for those things which are unreal. And then your thirst for celestial pleasures, your thirst for wealth, your thirst to just have your identity, your family. Again, these are things that may be needed, but they become an anartha when they become your identity. And then aparad, when you actually develop an offensive attitude towards spiritual life in various ways, generally by inattention, right? When you talk to someone, and if they're kind of wandering and inattentive, you become offended. And then, hidaya dorbhayam, weakness of heart. You just don't have that determination. But and a path is not manufactured. Generally, in ego, people manufacture things. I don't know about yoga, but it may be like that too. There are teachers, there's a path, right? You want to be good, you follow the path. And people with ego want to make their own path. That's what happens in religion. After one or two generations, out of ego, someone wants to make it their own. And then they branch off into something else. And the original is lost. So you follow that path. And Prabhupada said, according to regulative principles, how does bhakti work? Again, the way bhakti works is that when you are focused on God, that's called worship. And it has to be some affection. Otherwise, focusing means your heart and then your actions. From your heart, when you turn to God, either by a deep understanding or by an affection, when somehow you worship, when you chant, when you, any of the process, when you hear, when you come to this class here right now, there's some idea. So how is it working here? This is God, not me God, of course. That's my, but the message is spiritual. So when you're hearing it, what happens is there's a shakti or there's a potency. And the potency, when you're receptive, it touches your soul. And your soul awakens more in divine love. But the problem is when we don't have an attraction for it, we have to do it by obligation or understanding. So what this means is we have to have an understanding or an obligation to do what is good for us, which is to focus the mind on God. And there's really one main rule. We should think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. And therefore, it says that the acharya, the guru or the teachers, they find the ways and means to engage people in spiritual life. That's what's so great about kirtan, isn't it? In this modern world where there's so much distraction, to think of like really doing like a meditational process of like, you know, controlling the mind. And then kirtan is such an amazing, amazing process because the object of devotion is this sound. And you have this rhythm in this taal that's connected to the psyche. And it opens the heart to God in the form of his name. You know, and it's done communally, where there's a feeling of affection among the people, which opens the heart more. So it kind of creates this meditational process that anyone can do regardless of what mode of nature they're in, which is perfect for the Kali Yuga. But what Rupa Goswami did, the author here, and his brother, and his four associates, they called the six Goswamis, and they went to Vrindavan. They were from Bengal. Lord Chaitanya sent them to Vrindavan. And they excavated the holy places. They found all the holy places of Vrindavan. And they built the temples and things like that. And they lived very simply. And one thing they did is they built roads and brought in all kinds of scriptures and books, and they studied them scrutinizingly. all the scriptures they studied. Let's see if I remember the song. Nana Shastra Vacharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyau Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Si Jiva Gopalako Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano. They scrutinizingly studied all the scriptures, Sadharma Samstapako, to establish Dharma. So they, and this is what everyone does. This is what the Yoga Sutras is. Patanjali, he studied the Shastra to extract that. Any school does that. Because generally it's presented throughout the scriptures, but sometimes you need to focus it. So they collected and they came up with 64 main ways in which you can focus your mind on Krishna. And it was 10 preliminary ways, beginning with Guru Padashraya, that taking shelter of God through his representative, to make your bhakti pure, that you're acting in. See, when you do bhakti, it's not just an activity. It's done with love. So it's done with love. So anyway, so they made 10 preliminary items, what you do and 10 what you don't. And then there was so many other listed. All kinds of ways that you can engage your mind, body, and words in God's service. Anything from smelling the flowers offered to the Lord. There's so many different items, to paying your obeisances, to worshiping the Tulsi, to worshiping the Tulsi and the banyan tree, and things that you don't do, and then what are the 5 most potent items of devotional service? 5 most potent items of devotional service. Anyway, so here we got this Shravanam Kirtana. He listed 9. Next. Yeah, this is a famous verse. Shravanam means what? Hearing. Shravanam Kirtanam, chanting. Vishnu Smaranam, remembering. Padasevanam, humble service. Archanam, worship. Vandanam, prayer. Dasyam, the mood of a servant. It's a high thing. It's an internal mood. Sakyam, friendship. Atmanivedanam, you give everything. And you know where this verse is from? There's a famous story of a young boy who is a great, great devotee. His name was Prahlad. And he was somehow born to a demon king of the universe. And Vishnu, or God, had killed this king's brother, Hiranyaksha. So this king, he's the one that he performed great austerities to get powers. I don't want to tell the whole story, but he got so many powers, and he conquered all the demigods. So he sent his son to get trained in politics and rule. But what happened is when he went to perform austerities, his wife was pregnant. Typical man. Don't think it's anything new. These things have been going on for years, okay? Okay. So what happened was, he went to the ashram of a great saint, And the saint was always speaking spiritual things. And it affected the child in the womb. And the child in the womb became a great devotee, Prahlad. So he was only interested in Krishna consciousness. So this verse comes when his father, you know, he comes and he asks his son, you know, what do you learn in school today? And every time he'd give an answer that would blow his father's mind, you know, that this temporary world is full of suffering and you should worship Vishnu and go to the forest. Ah, you know. So one time he came back, he said, what did you learn in school today? And he said, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Padasevanam, and he quoted this verse. His father freaked out. You know what it'd be analogous to? It'd be analogous to if there was an ISIS leader, right? And his child became an Orthodox Jew. You know, and he called his son. He said, well, what did you learn in school today? And the kid went, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai, you know. So it was like that. He became so angry. But Shravanam, hearing, everything begins from hearing. This first hearing, hearing is the first principle. And hearing means to hear the holy name, to hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Kirtanam, chanting, smaranam, remembering, meditating. Padasevanam means humble service. See, when you do service, it's not a physical thing. It's not just a physical thing. It puts your body in a way that activates your spirit and love of devotion. And I gave those examples. When you pay your dandavats like a stick, you feel it. You feel it when you do service. So archanam is so important. Why would there always be deity worship? Everyone has a deity because what happens is the home is constructed around your false ego. When you have a deity, your home becomes constructed around your soul. And the main place is the kitchen. Because everything starts with the tongue, spiritual life. So it's the kitchen. But when you have a deity, then everything is God's. And you only eat what's offered. So it's a whole repositioning from being the seer in terms of being the enjoyer to being the seen or the enjoyed. And that's why grihasthas would really be a spiritual thing. It would shift the consciousness. And a lot of the items, everything, a lot of the different items, it would all your senses would be engaged in Krishna's service. And it also regulates you. Because when you have a deity, it regulates you. You can't eat until you do the worship. So all these things, and vandanam, prayers are such a beautiful thing. So, next verse. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to summarize all these six items. And like I say, for those of you that come regularly, I'm going to pound this into your head. You're really going to know this. You're going to know all the verses. You're going to know all the items. You're going to know the essence of them. You're going to know how to apply them in your life. So these are the most powerful items. Associate with devotees, chant the holy name, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, reside at Mathura, worship the deity with faith and veneration. And Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, if you do any of these items without offense, which means with a simple faith, then even a neophyte means one who doesn't have much love, can get bhava, which is mature love. And I've always give that there's many examples of this, where people in an innocent way take to one of these processes and their whole life becomes changed. Just hearing or and they'll have a real profound spiritual. So we really concentrate on these items. How fortunate we are to do kirtan, my God. My God, of everybody in the universe, we get to do kirtan. And again, it's that image that God somehow or other saw in that conditioned soul, we're so attached to be the enjoyer controller, saw a spark in the heart that I want to surrender to truth. I want to guide my life by truth. A spark in the heart. And then when God sees that, he arranges for sadhu who represents the truth. And then gives us the practices by how we can develop that consciousness of love and devotion more and more. Amazing. Then, next verse.
All right.
Yeah.
He says, live in Mathura.
Yeah.
Not Vrindavan.
You know, the way language is, you know, Mathura represents sometimes the whole thing. It's not just the aspect of Mathura, but Vrindavan. What are we up to now? Next verse.
This is the next verse.
Oh, I didn't see. I couldn't see the verse up there. Okay. Let me go over them quickly, and again, we'll go in depth, because I know next week what I have to cover won't be so long, so we'll get to go to this in depth. And then I think next week what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a PowerPoint with the verses, so we'll start chanting the verses at the beginning, and we'll remember them. And wow, you know, I don't really, this is a deep verse, but the main thing Prabhupada says is this is the definition of pure devotional service. We discussed this in Nectar of Devotion, but the main thing is the last line, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilam, Bhakti Uttama, the topmost bhakti. And the topmost bhakti is what? When you only want to please God. When your heart is just all love. And when they discuss God, Krishna, it's not limited to Krishna. Krishna is inclusive of his energies and his parts and parcels. So you may say, what about others? Krishna includes others. So it's a kind of universal love directed at God, but includes others. And shilana means it's a cultivation. It's not just a meditation. It's mind, it's body, it's words, it's things you do, it's things you don't do. And anu means following Krishna. So a very interesting thing happens. Following Krishna means what? When you want to please someone, you do what they want. And the main thing that Krishna wants is that we develop love. So he expresses his desires in the Shastra. What guru is one who knows the Shastra. So when we surrender to truth and we surrender to guru, what we're doing is pleasing God. And it goes up in the guru parampara to please God, and what comes down from God is an energy of love that enters into your heart. An energy of love enters into your heart. And real love and real happiness is not a mental thing. It's actually a real thing. It's an energy of God. It's the essence of his pleasure potency. The essence of his Ladini Shakti is called Krishna Prem. That love enters your heart. So this creates anu. Your activities follow Krishna, and Krishna is responsive, and his energy comes down, and you have a spiritual energy. Something happens, a spiritual energy comes to your heart. And Anya bila shita shunyam. I remember I once went to this sadhu. And anyway, I wanted to learn something. So he said, what do you want to learn? I said, Jiva Dharma. I didn't know what the book was. I just I heard it, you know. And I'm teaching it now. But in the book, it's a novel about people coming to Krishna consciousness. And it starts at the very beginning. It goes to the highest stuff. So he looked at me, he said, so you want to understand Raganuga Bhakti? He said, Anya Bilashita Shunyam. It means no other desires. That's what love means. And aren't those people the most beautiful that only want to please God and others? And aren't those persons the worst that only think about themselves? They're not surrendered. They're not surrendered. To what? To truth. They're only interested. Everybody, I don't want to surrender. What do you want to do? You don't want to surrender. What do you want to do? You want to just think of yourself. So, and then the next one. So Shravanam is first, but you must hear from the right person. And without this, it's hard for bhakti to be selfless. Because accepting teacher and accepting process and accepting guru, right, it is accepting truth beyond your own desire. And the tendency when you execute devotional service without that, then it becomes too mixed with your own desires and what you want to do. And it becomes like an imitation. It doesn't become the real thing. And that's why they say one must accept guru. That's the purpose of guru, to bring your life and your activities beyond just your whim. Otherwise, in devotional service, you do just what you want. Right? And there's an element in bhakti to be enthusiastic of doing what you want. But within the parameters of a teacher who sees what your nature and then makes it pure. I remember just recently in Vrindavan, this one person, approached me. And they wanted to execute pure devotional service and they wanted to be in an ashram. But the other hand, they had a lot of abilities and a lot of qualities. And they had desire. They had a mission that they wanted. And it was a very, very big mission in education. So, they asked me, can this be spiritual? I said, well, in many ways it can. For one thing is, you need to be peaceful in life, and this is who you are, so you have to use it. Two, you need to be economically stable, so doing something that you're good at and you like. Okay? Three, you really want to help the mission, but by this you'll be contacting people that are in very, very high and established places. And if you make resources, you can do, good work to spread spiritual life. And if you surrender to guru and it gets sanctioned, then it no longer becomes your desire. It becomes completely purified. So this makes it's selfless. Let's go. We're going to go quickly right now. Okay. Utsahan, enthusiasm. Without enthusiasm, faith just stays in the heart and does nothing. Without enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is so important. And, Prabhupada really wanted people to be encouraged. And a lot of the encouragement is your connection with teachers that want to please. You want to please your teachers, relationships with people in bhakti. And I was in Vrindavan in Prabhupada's last days. he kept on calling all the leaders of the Hare Krishna movement to come there. It was the middle of the summer. I remember one leader came and it was just so hot. Vrindavan, parts of Vrindavan are in Guinness Books of World Record for the highest recorded temperature in an inhabited place, by the way. And the summer, I've been in the summer, you can't imagine what it's like. So I remember one couldn't take it, this leader from America. So he just made he was really smart. So he made a thing and he filled up his room with water and it became a steam bath. So it didn't work. But he probably kept on calling him. They kept on going. He kept on calling him. Why? Because that love of him, which would create an affection, would give the enthusiasm that would bring the faith out of the heart into a positive action of service. You need to be encouraged. I'm a very, very big proponent of what's called empowerment and a very big critic of bureaucracy and disempowerment. And what empowerment is, this is my own definition, is you see what a person can do, you encourage that person, you facilitate it. Then you make broad parameters by which they work in a greater institutional or community, group. But disempowerment is when you just start with what the parameters are. You can't do this or this, or you're not here, or you're not this, or you can't do this here or this, you got to get this rule and sign this paper, you got to do this and this. That's disempowerment. And it wasn't Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada had an institution, but he was empowering. He took young people and gave them missions that were amazing. You know, he saw what people can do. That's really what my mood is. You know, people should be empowered. They should be encouraged in service. And everyone has some abilities, has some talents, and they should be facilitated and encouraged. So, enthusiasm. Next. And enthusiasm for what? We discussed this as our theme. It's enthusiasm for the truth. For something that comes from a higher plane, not just our impulses. And when we follow that, our hearts become enlivened and we do become enthusiastic. And next one. And that enthusiasm it's not limited to just your practice. It's everything. And if you read Prabhupada's purport, he's describing how everything belongs to God. So your enthusiasm, when you really have enthusiasm, it's for everything. It's for seeing how to engage everything in God's service. Prabhupada was amazing because he wanted to take over the world. You know, with a bunch of hippies, He wanted to take over the world. And he was amazing. Amazing. He saw everything. So this is called Yukta Vairagya, everything. And how do we get that eagerness? The next verse. From people and from reading the sacred texts. Because from people, we have to see what love of Godhead is like. And from the scriptures, it describes those people. And it describes the object of love. And when you keep on hearing and hearing and hearing, this is how you get eagerness. It comes from people. And the next verse. The only qualification is this eagerness. It's not your material piety. It's not your knowledge. It's this eagerness. You may be whatever you are, but if someone touches your heart and you become enthusiastic, you have the the qualification for Krishna consciousness. And again, I read from Bhakti Rakshaka Sridharmaraj's book, he says that is their demand, and that plane is built up with that demand. It's enthusiasm for that. Enthusiasm for the truth and serving the truth and serving those who represent the truth. And when that comes into the heart, it's the only qualification, and it's called lolium, it's greed. I'm going to go real quickly, and we're going to cover it tomorrow. The next one, patience, forbearance. The path is not going to be easy. And the fruit may not come immediately. But you have to tolerate. You have to tolerate. And this is so important. And Prabhupada, in Nectar Devotion, he described how he went through so much trouble, but he tolerated. You know, I think 2 hours is like a long time. I kind of have a sense right now. I'm kind of at the end. And it's kind of like I gave a great feast today, and everybody's like their stomach is so full, and I'm like the Indian host that even though their hands are over the plate, I'm still pouring on the good preparations. I think it's going to be enough, but we have a lot of good things to discuss. That really super important things. The rest of the things is. I'll just read what the items are, and maybe should I do a little of the drama?
Oh yes, do the drama.
Okay, great. No mercy. Okay, enthusiasm, endeavoring with confidence, being patient, act according to the regulative principles, chanting, hearing, abandoning the association of non-devotees, following the footsteps of previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of Krishna consciousness. So one of the things is this patience and confidence is very important. That you really have faith in that goal. And you have so much faith and confidence in that goal that it's so beautiful that the price you pay for it is little. And therefore, if you go through difficulties, you know, and you don't say, I'm going to get, you know, it, like, for example, some people, there's one lady I met in Colombia. She's now studying a PhD in clinical psychology. She doesn't have a minute. I can't believe how they work people in these programs. It's insane. I went to give a class there at Colombia. She met me 15 minutes before, 15 minutes afterwards. She doesn't have a minute. What? But she's not complaining because she realizes this goal. So a lot in Krishna consciousness is faith in the goal. So this is a drama written in iambic pentameter, Shakespearean rhyme, about someone who got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya by having faith in the goal. So I'll tell you what the story is. I'm not going to do the whole drama. What happens is this good up here? A star is born? They should ban me from speaking for more than 2 hours. I get a certain intoxication. It's kind of exhausting speaking. It's just like, you know, and then tomorrow I'll do 7 hours.
It's giving me the second half.
What?
Giving
I know, it's really great. If anybody wants to come, we're having our Sadhu Sunday at Yoga Maya tomorrow. And Gop will talk about that in a second afterwards. We're having a Kirtan, Anantana Chuta. I'm going to speak a little bit. We're going to have a feast also. It's going to be the old traditional Sunday feast. We do really nicely, you know, boom, 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 all the activities. So what happens is somehow or other, everyone's getting blessings except this one wonderful devotee who's this great kirtan person, and Lord Chaitanya doesn't give him blessings. So Mukunda, that's his name, he says, "The graceful Lord has not called out my name. Perhaps he has forgotten, failed to see. Or I committed fault, bringing me shame. Disgracing the Lord, disgracing my God. Since the Lord knows all, forgets nothing, there is only my sins that leaves me alone. I shall stand and wait in hope of his call, praying my faults have not denied me God's home." Srivas Thakur to Lord Chaitanya. "O Master of the universe, please, you have blessed all but one saintly soul. The devotee Mukunda still awaits you. He is friend to all, deserving of praise. His service is pure. He is dear to our hearts. His respect for the holy name is true. His singing casts the blissful wave through all. And his greatest wish is to serve your grace. Please call him before you to hear your words." Lord Chaitanya, Mukunda's offense is the greatest sin. Speak not of him more in this time of bliss. Srivas, "My Lord, please say this is some heartfelt jest, for all here know Mukunda to be pure. He has before been so dear to your grace, yet now he is disgraced as a sinner. If his offense is deep, let it be known, for great sadness fills us to see him gone. Or else I must beg you, let him see you. His devotion is pure of heart and soul." Lord Chaitanya, "Never speak like that to me, Srivas. Do not defend the wretched souls to me. If you do not know the truth of what you speak, of his great offenses, he cannot be free. Mukunda comes with flowers in his hand, chanting the holy name in charming mirth. Only in my presence is he so free. Alone his sin is the weight of the earth." Mukunda on the aside, "Of what sin does he speak with such harsh words? Denied his presence? For what should I live? Speak on, dear Lord, speak. For what have I done? Of these sins you speak, I pray you forgive." Lord Chaitanya, "Mukunda is of the people he meets, speaking to serve the thoughts of those gathered. It is the Lord he attacks and he cheats by choosing his mood by his company. Does he not know wherever he goes, the Lord Krishna is forever with him? Yet he chooses to see the Lord only here when devotees are requesting him to sing. He attacks the Lord with an iron mace, denying my love when it is given. Instead, he brings the holy name disgrace, his withdrawn footprints in ungodly soil." Advaita, "Dear Lord, your words sound hard upon his name. None present know of what offense you speak. For all he has been true in voice and soul. Please, please, let our minds know his true nature, for then we can rest easy in our hearts." Lord Chaitanya, "Mukunda is an impersonalist, a philosopher of self-deception, a thief and a madman, a cold scoundrel. His surrender is weak with apprehension. Let those gathered look only to his face, for a visage he has many and more. Yet with the Lord he presents only one, purity as you have all seen before. Unworthy of praise, he is a sword, double-edged, with edge for love and edge for scorn. Speak not adulations of this poor soul. He is lost and from my service is torn. When he is with me, he is pure and just. When without, he believes the codes of fools. He does not glorify the devotees, but glorifies the lies of absurd schools. If he believes the words of harlequins, he laughs at the holy name of the divine. If impersonality is his call, he is no saint, no devotee of mine. Mukunda. Lord Chaitanya's words are as ever true. I walk the path of impersonal thought. O Krishna, on one day I follow you, the next day I believe the words of gestures. I offend your name. I offend your friends. To see was to see, and I lost what I saw. My service was false. My love was pretend. I shall not see the Lord in any lifetime. This body must die, for what could I live if the Lord has banished me from his side? There is no hope for this lost of lost souls. Today I have fallen. Today I have died. Lord Chaitanya, I trust our hearts will rest softly onwards, knowing the truth of our one saintly friend. Mukunda, O Srivas Thakur, please listen closely, for my heart grieves at such disdain from the Lord. If you have patience to hear such a wretched, hear me, so your pity I can afford. Srivas, my cheeks are stained with tears for your sweet name, for you have brought joy to the hearts of all. Speak on, my dear friend. I shall listen close, praying the Lord shall change his mind for you. Mukunda, I am not worthy of this graceful gift. Even though I am the most fallen of men, God still grants me mercy of your humble name. I hope one day I shall see you again. Please, my devoted saint, ask of the Lord if this sinful beast shall ever return to the service of God and his devotees. For this chance and only this I shall learn. Srivas. O Lord Chaitanya, O humility, all the devotees weep for this lost soul. O Lord Chaitanya, O nobility, shall he return to the service of Godhead? Advaita, in any lifetime, near or far future? Srivas, he shall be your servant, my Lord, my grace. Advaita, Krishna, we weep for his soul. Pray he returns. Lord Chaitanya, his offense is the deepest, my dearest friends, and yet you weep for such a forlorn man? He shall not see me for 10 million births. There is no doubt of this. The verdict stands. Mukunda, I will. Hare Krishna, I am splashed by the bliss of the divine. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya, I hear the saintly cry of Mukunda. Bring him before me at once. All, bring Mukunda. Lord Chaitanya, Mukunda, your offense has been destroyed. Look upon me now. Take hold of my words. Rise, you are a devotee of the Lord. Forget the chastisement that you have heard. You are pure in soul and very dear to me. Let your service as singer of the Lord commence. For you are saintly and shall not answer for half a sesame seed of offense. When you heard for you 10 million bursts, there was no anger in your heart for God. For as a pure devotee filled with mirth, you could live 10 million more for Krishna, knowing your soul would return to Godhead. Mukunda, dear Lord, I am but a pile of ashes. Blown so swiftly by the winds of desire, I am worthless, not deserving of praise. Lord Chaitanya, I do not give mercy to those without love. Your faith is shown by devotion to my words. Those who curse true devotion to Krishna cause pain in my heart and tears in my eyes. When devotion is present, I cry in joy. I grant you this blessing, my devotee. Pure devotion in the words from your tongue. You shall be the singer of Lord Krishna. Your sweet songs melting the hearts of Vaishnavas. Chant on and let your devotion be true. All the devotees. Jai, Jai, Haribo, Jai Jagannath. Mukunda, Hare Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Haribo. Isn't that a great, written, imperfect, iambic pentameter? But the same person who wrote the other drama. And this has been about 15 years, 20 years sitting in my desk. And I gave it to the drama group, and then I thought I'd use it for today. They never used it. I didn't read the beginning. But what happened is somehow or other this Mukunda went to hear from teachers who had Mayavad or view of God. You know, they were against. So he was hearing, and sometimes it's subtle. So Lord Chaitanya was teaching him a lesson. So he said, he will not see me for 10 million years.
but he had so much value for God that he thought he was getting a bargain. So, and you know, he had faith. I will. And then, so anyway, that's patience. That's confidence. Okay, are there any questions? Okay, so out of my mercy, I will let you out 10 minutes early. Okay, I'm not going to do the writing and the question stuff. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.